Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, September 24th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 20 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, even repeatedly, they can serve as a powerful tutorial for you to help you get maximum benefit from these tools in the shortest amount of time possible. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We help people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials, and if you have any of those to share with us, we'd appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I can turn on the microphone, announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. If you prefer not to call live or don't have that ability, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you, we'll address it on the internet show. And then as time allows, send you a notification so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody does that, as it makes it infinitely easier for us to live into our intention with this work. And the intention we have with this work is to be of service, So please let us know how it can be of service to you. It is a Tuesday, which means there will be a support group, a free support group available tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. And all the information you would need to be able to join that is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. Please remember, if you go there, there are two different info pages for login for the support groups. One is for Tuesday night and one is for Thursday night. And we'd be happy to have you join us and or to forward that information along to anybody you know who might be interested in joining us. And in that support group, we may listen to an hour of one of our favorite teachers, or we might just work on doing worksheets and processing. And came to my attention that soon shall be published a book titled The Lowly Prophet by Mark Hattis, which may be of interest to people who listen to an internet show like this. And so when that publication date hits the formal publication date, I was able to preview the book, and it's a delightful novelization of the struggles of an individual who kept getting messages about becoming the Christ, birthing the Christ, and through the process of doing that was healing through mental health challenges and then helping others heal through mental health challenges. And essentially, Mark Hattis has been a student of Dr. Michael Rice's work for about 14 years now, if my reckoning is correct, maybe only 12, but that book, when it is finally made available, when it goes live as publishing, I will promote it again. But it's just another way that the message about these teachings are getting out there into the world. So again, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. We didn't have, if I remember correctly, we didn't have any hands go up yesterday, so it was a day of me talking and reading from both the Butterflies Are Free to Fly book, which is available free online or through Kindle, and then reading some from the Way of Mastery. And just a brief recap, yesterday I was talking about why am I reading the Butterflies Are Free to Fly book? And the essence of that answer is because it's asking us to challenge everything we think we know. Just as the Way of Mastery in the Promise asks us to put down everything we think we know and everything we think we need, and also look in the places within our own mind where we have looked on things with fear or judged things as bad or wrong and downloaded a fearful response to things. And so, in keeping with one of the first teachings I got from Dr. Michael Rice, which is if we are trying to learn something new and it's got any level of complexity, the more different ways we hear that material from slightly different perspectives, the faster we will understand it and the deeper our understanding will be. And that's the spirit in which I'm sharing, reading from, perhaps for some even recommending that they take a look at the book Butterflies Are Free to Fly. It also fits with my sensibilities in doing this internet show and the support groups, in that I do not promote things that would cost people money, because the essence of this work is available without having to pay. And while some people might benefit from paying a coach or a therapist to support them in this kind of work, I feel called to point out that lots of good stuff about the core teachings here is available without need for payment. And now in that same category, we've got, Michael Rice says thousands of hours, but we've got 13 and a half years of the archives of this show available, and we have a whole series of files from those shows that have been curated out by Jeannie that that can serve as a resource for you, that are ways that we have spent our time and energy to discuss these tools and support people in using them. And I don't think we mention the archives as a tool enough, but they're there. And there are shows where people have been stepped through the worksheet process, and there are shows where people have asked powerful questions that have led to discussions that have expanded all of our knowledge or understanding or experience with this work. So, again, the call-in number, 563-999-3581. And once you call that number, press 1 on your phone and or send me an email, tjh-mindshifters-academy.org. And I get very few emails through that particular email address, so it's quite likely that I will get to you and respond to you within a day or two. So, let me know what's on your mind, and or I will come back to the reading I was doing yesterday with The Way of Mastery, and we're reading in Lesson 30, where we left off. It says, with Jesus talking, saying, "When I said, the meek shall inherit the earth, I meant that eventually there will be established as the pervasive quality of human consciousness just this state of being. The world will be populated by creators who arise in the morning and say, this day really belongs to the Creator. I am just created to extend the Creator's will. Father, what would be a groovy way to hang out on this day?" Close quotes. And some of those minds might hear, quote, "Oh, just hang out in the forest and listen to the birds," close quotes. And then those beings will give their day to delighting as deeply as possible in the experience of the singing of the birds. Others will hear a different message, and they will set about and do whatever they are asked. Why, you wonder? Because the mind of the Creator is no longer in resistance. Sanity has been reestablished, and there is nothing to fret about. Now, this particular passage that I just read is the essence of what's contained in the new book, The Lowly Prophet, by Mark Hattis. It's this awakening to the realization that the intellectual part of my brain has very limited applicability to my true life, my true awareness, my consciousness, you might say my reason for being, you might say my soul, you might say my spiritual life. But the intellect is not the primary user interface for the spiritual life. for connecting with others in a deep way. And so this idea of asking over and over again, hey, Creator, what would you have me do? What's mine to do next? How can I act in a way that extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful? That's a phrase that comes from Way of Mastery, and it's sprinkled all throughout Mark Haddis's new book, The Lowly Prophet. This idea of learning to live in the question, as Rilke would call us to, this idea of understanding that life is going to flow and unfold. I'm not forcing that to happen. I can be an instrument of capital L love. I can be an instrument of compassion. I can be an instrument of the creative flow of life. And the best way for me to do that is to get into this receptive, open space and ask to be shown. What's needed in this moment? What is life calling for? What does this brother or sister in front of me need? Because as the Way of Mastery calls us to understand, I really don't know what anything is or is for. I don't know what any of my brothers or sisters need. And so this is the distinction they're trying to make here in lessons 29 and 30 about the idea, the difference between creating and making. And in creating, I'm asking to be shown and I'm making myself available to extend the creative energy, the creative force. Everything that becomes the good, the holy, and the beautiful. And in making, I'm stuck in my intellectual mind and I'm trying to reason things out and I'm using rationalizations for being angry and bitter and judging and we're being offered a different way to approach life with this work. So the text goes on here and says, the mind involved in making listens for the impulse of God, and then it has a million reasons why that can't be. And those reasons are always linked to learning that has occurred in the past or an anxiety that's being projected into an imagined future. In other words, the mind of a maker is never present in the moment. It's caught up in the illusion of duality, not in the reality of perfect oneness. One who knows is a creator, and a creator is empty of him or herself. That is, empty of the self that was made in error, all the thoughts about myself, all the shoulds. The knower of capital R reality is the presence of capital L love, the spaciousness through which the creator extends its perfect will. So life itself is this creative energy expanding and extending and knowing itself and expanding some more and extending some more and knowing itself. And you are a part of that. And you get to experience being a part of it when you let go of all of your thoughts about what you should do and all of your thoughts that create judgment, as this work brings us to in the third lesson, where it says, I realized when I walked upon the earth as a man that the greatest gift I could ever receive would only come to me as I chose to give up, to surrender every judgment, every perception that I would conjure up about my life and about you, my brother or sister. Because every time I make a judgment, every time I think I know something, every time I try to act from my intellectual processing, I'm just spitting out what's been stuffed in there. And it hides from me the depth and richness and truth of life itself and of your true nature as a fellow traveler on this path. It hides from me my true nature when I think, well, I'm a psychologist and I'm this and I'm that, and I'm so many years old and I'm a male and I'm this. That is so limited. That's perhaps even more limited than taking a drop out of the ocean and saying, this is the ocean. So this energy of love, which is all life, which is God, which is the creation itself, is extending its perfect will, and you can be a conduit of that if you start asking, if you start living in the question, if you start opening yourself to be used by something that's of higher import than you. And well, here's one of the key things is you got to then just suspend all of that intellectual processing and judgment. Because instantly, if you were raised, especially in the Western world, when somebody says, yeah, just ask to be shown, then the Western mind, the intellect says, okay, so show me, show me, show me. And they want some hard, tangible evidence or a specific thought. Go here and do that. And that's not staying open. That's not putting yourself in the questioning state and learning to live there. So the text here goes on and says, the mind of one who knows and rests in true creativity is just merely present in life, present and witnessing the extraordinary, mysterious ways of life, of love, of the creative energy expanding. For capital L love allows all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, and therefore transcends all things. Perfect peace can only exist where the mind has transcended all conflicted states of duality. I'll read that again. It's a little bit of a test for us to slow down. Perfect peace, this mental, emotional, you might say spiritual peace that most people are striving for, can only exist where the mind has transcended all of its conflicted states of duality, all of its judgments, all of its assessments, all of its perceptions, you might say. And it's quick to point out here that transcendence is not denial. It can only come through embracing and through allowing this present moment, all aspects of this present moment. Your mind is a mind that has been healed. It has been healed. You do not need to heal it. You only need to accept that that healing has been accomplished by the grace of that love, capital L love, that gave rise to you, that birthed you for the purpose of extending creation. That is what I meant when I said a teacher of God need only accept the atonement for him or herself. You don't have to create the atonement. You don't have to build the atonement. You don't have to find the atonement. It's done. What does that mean? It means you have access. You have abilities to perceive and sensitivities within your energy system that you have not been taught to tune into, that you've not been taught to strengthen through awareness. So they suggest these two statements. I am already healed. Time to get on with it. Your mind, I'm going back one paragraph, your mind has already been healed. You do not need to heal it. You only need to accept that that healing has been accomplished by the grace of this creative energy that we call love, that same energy that birthed you for the purpose of extending itself so that life, creation, love can extend itself through you. That's one way to think about your reason for being, your purpose for having an incarnation in the physical. And the text goes on and says, that is what I meant when I said that a teacher of God need only accept the atonement for him or herself. And the suggested statements are, I'm already healed. It's time to get on with it. The text then goes on and reads, all forms of healing then are merely contexts created by this energy of love through a mind that has accepted the healing. A context created that would give the mind that perceives itself as unhealed, although it's always healed, that it would give that mind an opportunity to choose differently. What choice would I make? I would make the choice to accept the atonement. I would accept the at-one-ment. I would accept the truth of the statement that says your mind is healed just as it is. Area code 610, is this Susan?
Hi, Dr. Jim. Boy, oh boy, this is so fantastic. I have this, you know, Dietrich sends out stuff every once in a while. You probably get them too. This came up about a week ago, and I've been thinking about asking if I could read it on the show, but you're right on it right now with these two, these authors. To accept the atonement, to know that you're healed. This is the crux of it, and I don't understand how to get there except to do it. Anyway, let me read this. He has... Is that okay? I know I'm interrupting your reading. Okay. So this is a this is a quote from Goethe. To live within limits, to want one thing or a few things very much and love them dearly, cling to them, survey them from every angle, become one with them, that is what makes the poet, the artist, and the human being. That's the quote that he is arguing with. Dietrich, he says, Goethe states that a one-pointed focus makes the human being, and I see that somewhat differently. The human being wants the human experience. That means a bewildering range of experiences it can call love or pleasure or pain or freedom. BS, he says. Each of these is nothing more than some chosen preferred aspect of the idea of separation. Ultimately, there can only be one thing that I truly want, peace. Peace is absolutely independent of the human experience. He puts human experience in quotes and has nothing to do with circumstances. If peace is not the single one-pointed desire I nourish, any other desire will forever lead to new desires. To only want peace has its own immediate reward, which is, I am at peace. That's the end of the quote. When you're reading what you're reading, it's as if this is the only way we could ever find peace. The only way to be comfortable in this world and to be able to take pure action rather than manipulative action or calculated action in order to get something. I feel as if you're talking all around this with your readings, and this quote could be part of that. Did that reading make any sense to you?
Yeah, it makes me think of Guy Finley when he says, you know, there's all this talk about the law of attraction and the secret and this, that, and the other thing. He's all these people are trying to teach other people how to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And the way of mastery talks about it and says, hey, you know, the problem with that manifesting this business is that you can only manifest, you can only want to manifest what the culture has taught you would be a good thing to manifest.
Right.
And so Guy Finley says, at the end of this talk, kind of his teaser, he says, at the end of this talk, I'm going to give you something new to manifest, life-changing thing to manifest.
Mm.
Okay, so you listen to the whole talk and you get to the end of it and he says, okay, here it is, drum roll please. The new thing to ask to be able to manifest is manifest a way to be happy or at peace with whatever you have right now in this moment.
Mm.
And that's what I'm thinking of as you're reading from Diedrich. This is the same as the teaching that Abraham gives when Abraham says, your most important creation in any given moment is your emotion in that moment, and you're the one creating it.
Mm-hmm.
This echoes what the Way of Mastery is teaching us, that we are creating, we are choosing, whether we realize it or not, our own experience of life in each moment. And most of us are raised to believe that life's happening to us and we're a victim and so-and-so did that and that's causing my upset, et cetera. So this is the same message that comes from Diedrich Wolzak. It comes from Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery and Byron Katie and Butterflies Are Free to Fly, et cetera. And this is what Plato in his allegory of the cave was trying to get people to understand. It's thousands of years old as knowledge, I wouldn't even use the word wisdom, lived experience that people have had. That's how we're defining knowledge in this work. It's not an intellectual knowing. It's not a bunch of words I can say or write down on a piece of paper that somebody else can read it and then they have the experience. This is the direct personal experience. That's what we're calling knowledge. And people have understood this. What they really want is peace. And so Abraham says, mm-hmm. You don't really want more money or a different relationship or a fancy car. What you want is the emotion you think you're going to experience when you get that thing that you say you want.
So it's
and
all
that's
attachment.
The peace, right, that's the peace that Diedrich's referring to in this work. That peace, that happiness, that contentment.
Yeah. There's that phrase in the liturgy in the Episcopal Book of Common Prayer. It's probably everywhere, the peace that passeth all understanding. But I'm thinking, I don't think I want that. I'm afraid of that peace because I think it's going to end up that I'll be dull with no strong feelings about anything. I'm just thinking out loud because these thoughts haven't come to me. I've avoided being non-attached, even though I think it's the ideal thing, and wouldn't that be a relief? But I've also thought I would have no shape to myself. I'd be nothing. And that's
right.
Good, I realize.
Well, but it isn't that, but those are just words, right? And since we know that they are fear-based, we know they're wrong.
Yeah, that is true. Right. Yep.
So what the people who have the most direct experience with this, who keep teaching this, what they say is, what's going to happen, people like Michael Singer talk about this, what's going to happen when that happens is you're going to be more alive. You're going to have experiences that go beyond what your senses can register. You're going to be more vibrant, more exciting. Mm. You're going to be more attractive to other people. They're going to want what you've got. Mm. They're going to feel this energy radiating out of you. It's the opposite of what your mind is throwing up as a barrier to doing it. Now, why would your mind throw up a barrier for you to do that work? Because the mind we're talking about that you're thinking of is your thoughts about yourself, who you think you are, the mother of certain people, the teacher of certain music students, the creator of certain liturgical operas, the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what you're thinking of as yourself. And the essence of this teaching is that's not your true self. that's literally like, you know, half a drop of the ocean, and your true self is the entire ocean in its endless variety.
To really believe that. I'm thinking of a brother-in-law who died recently. He was in his late 80s, and I have a picture of him just taken just moments or maybe hours before he died. And it's obvious that he's been forced or been willing, who knows, to give up everything. Everything is going. Everything he thought he was is going. But why have to wait that long to that point? It would be great to get there before that point.
Well, and that's what these teachings are telling us, is we don't have to wait. It's available in the present moment.
Mm.
The now moment. And it's available as we start dropping all of the shoulds. And it's available as we start questioning, what's mine to do here to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful?
Yeah.
And this other thing is so worth exploring. What is your fear? Well, you just said, my fear is I'm going to be dull. It's going to be boring.
Or a total clown. Absolutely out of control. A total clown. Just a ridiculous person. Good grief. It's hard to stay sane.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, you know, like that's if you tap into Mark Haddis's new book, The Lowly Prophet, they're going to have all that stuff stirred up, because here's a person who's living life in the world today who hears the voice of Jesus telling him to do things and does it and is terrified of telling other people that he's hearing that.
Yeah.
And what life unfolds like when one faces that fear and steps into it, because the realization in all these deep teachings is, if it's a fearful thought, it's false.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a fearful thought, it's from the separated mind, it's from the intellect, it's from the ego, it's been trained into me. I only have fear for those things I've been trained to fear.
Yeah. How do you spell his last name?
Who?
Mark Haddis.
Mark Haddis. Haddis. I'll send you a link to the book. It hasn't been published yet, but I'll send you a link to the preview of it if you're interested. But it's the kind of thing that's going to go right at what you're talking about. Here's a person who is writing a book titled The Lowly Prophet and saying, in this world today, I'm getting messages from God, from Jesus, from Holy Spirit, and when I follow them, my life goes beautifully. And when I fight it and get fearful, my life turns kind of cramped and scared and frustrated and hurt.
Mm.
But all these teachings say, listen, if it's a fearful thought you're having, you can instantly know it's not true.
Yeah, that's good to hold
because
on to that
fear,
thought.
Fear is of the ego. And what you're asking for when you're in a spiritual path like this is the opposite of the ego, an alternative to the ego, something more expansive, something more integrated or connected than the ego can offer. And as soon as you start talking and thinking like that, guess who or what in you starts screaming? The ego, right? The ego itself, the part of you that thinks it is just the drop of water, and that's all it needs to know the whole ocean. I know what I need to know. I don't need any of this hocus-pocus, hooey stuff from such and such a teacher. Or such, you know, I don't need any religious. I don't need any spiritual. I don't need any. I'm fine just the way I am. What part of my mind offers up those fearful thoughts and conclusions? The egoic part, the part that thinks it already has everything it needs, and it thinks it's right, and everybody that doesn't agree with it is wrong.
Mm.
The one way to take your processing to the next level is just watch for your fearful thoughts. Literally just watch for your fearful thoughts, and whether you like to do a meditation or do a prayer or whatever, just in that moment, just have at it and say, okay, I give all this up. Mm. I canceled it. I ask to be shown something else. You know, essentially in the book, Mark Hattis basically just takes Michael Rice's process of canceling thoughts and goals and asking to be shown something else and puts it in a narrative format and encourages people to just feel and breathe and allow the energies to move through them and ask to be shown a different way to look at things. So he's basically got the reality management worksheet process, the goal canceling, mm-hmm. the forgiveness process from the ancient Aramaic in a narrative format.
I bet this is totally universal, but I'm thinking about what my fear is, to be totally abandoned, or if not that, then to be hated or made fun of for being ridiculous or stupid. I mean, those are so they shape how, I think there's a lot of true stuff in me, but there's so much of that that's afraid of not being acceptable. I guess that's what it is.
Hi, how are you?
Just, so it's easy to pick out the fears. They're right sitting right there. Oh, anyway, we don't need to do this on here, but thanks. Good.
Well, but this that you're talking about is, as you said, it's a universal thing. At one level or another, we're all struggling with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just... somebody else texted me and said they'd like a copy of the book, too. So I just texted Mark Hattis to see if he has the space to call in. But if he doesn't, maybe we'll have him on in the not-too-distant future.
That would be great.
But the essence is, you know, I've never met a human being who wasn't often driven by fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, despite the fact that when most people meet me and have experience of me, that's one of the last things they would think about with me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you think about what have I done with my limited intellectual capacity and my limited physical prowess, I've done some things in my life and, you know, bought a motorcycle and ridden around the country, put 14,000 miles on a motorcycle one summer. Well, summer into the fall, into the Thanksgiving time, just driving around the country on my own from coast to coast, from north to south. Well, you wouldn't think of somebody who does that as somebody who's fearful. And yet, when I... started doing this deeper energy work, the neuroemotional technique stuff specifically, where it identifies which meridian is disrupted and then identifies what emotion is tied to that meridian that's active in the moment. Without a doubt, far and away, the most common emotion I need to reconnect the energy to and get flowing through my life is fear.
Yeah.
Far and away, the water meridian, the kidneys, et cetera, are identified as the driving force behind my being stuck.
Wow.
And so go ahead.
Do you think that's inevitable because we did what Sundberg agreed to do, was walk in the physical? As soon as we agree to do that, we're just asking for trouble.
Well, these teachings say that the fear was born when we started thinking, I can be separate from the rest of creation.
Well, that's being born.
That's being born, but it's also, even before you get born into the physical, it's this idea of a sense of self that's separate. Who am I? Well, I'm name and name, right?
Yeah.
I'm such and such a body size and gender. I'm such and such a political affiliation, et cetera.
Mm.
So fear is the essence of the sense of self.
Yeah.
So
there
without
it is. Okay.
Fear, there couldn't be a sense of self, because what these teachings tell us is that the fear is born in the moment I try to experience myself as being separate from the flow of life and creation.
Can we have a self without feeling separate?
Well, we do. We are. We were. We existed before this thought process. And it's, you know, the essence of all of these deep spiritual teachings is accepting the atonement or the at-one-ment, recognizing that's a fake thing, that I'm separate. Me thinking that I am just the whatever, the accomplishments I've made, the degrees I've gotten, the money I've accumulated, me thinking that is false.
Can you
Doesn't
give
that
up
make sense?
That? It does, except can you give up that and have anything left? I'm trying to find the line.
Okay.
I guess I'd be able
here's
to talk.
Here's the point.
Yeah.
Everything is available. It's not,
okay,
will there be anything left? It's that everything that you are extends out, around, through, and extends infinitely beyond those tiny little thoughts.
Have you experienced that yourself?
Yes, in fleeting flashes. Maybe,
okay,
maybe three of them in my lifetime.
Okay.
But it's the kind of thing that people experience or try to find words for when they've had a deep spiritual, you know, like a peak emotional experience or a spiritual awakening. That's what happens. They say, wait, it's like there's no time. It's like I was connected to everything. It's like it wasn't really me, but I was everywhere at once. So yes, it's these teachings are your thoughts about how you're going to lose things. Like so often, all of these things say, we're not here to take anything from you. Showing you that what you believe isn't true isn't stealing anything from you.
Mm.
Right? It's just showing you the false nature of your beliefs. It's not that they're stealing something real from you. It's just showing you, oh, wait a minute. That thing that you believed, that thing that you thought was happening, never really happened. That's not stealing something from you. That's opening you to potentials and possibilities that go far beyond words each new heartbeat. I'm trying to think of, you know, a real practical way to, it's like, it's kind of the thing that just popped into my head was when I was a kid, I had all kinds of cavities, and they had a drill that had a great big motor mm-hmm. that sat right next to the chair with a rubber, belt on it that drove this thing, and it went up, and these chains, and it made this horrible noise, and it was a grinding sound, and when he pushed too hard, you could hear the motor slowing and fighting against it.
Yes.
But that's, and I hated the drill. I hated to have to go and have cavities, drilled out and whatever. But at some point in time, the dentist that we've been to our whole lives, you think of that as a kid. My whole life I've been coming here. How old are you? 7.
Right.
My whole life I've been coming here. So I was probably, 12 or 14 or 15 years old, and the dentist got an upgrade to a faster high-speed drill. The motor was hidden, and the drill was so much faster that it created so much friction that they needed to spray water to cool it down.
Right.
So it would spray a little mist of water. It would a little spray of water and cool it down as it was, and it was so much faster and so much easier, and everybody loved it, and I would not let him use it on me.
Oh no.
I was so fearful of that newfangled thing that went, wait a minute, it goes even faster than the old drill, and the old drill's painful enough. And I somehow in my mind, I conflated the speed with the pain or whatever.
Oh.
My sisters, my brother, my parents, they all let the doctor use the new drill. I insisted on the old drill until I went in one day, and there wasn't an old drill in the office anymore. They'd gotten rid of it, and I didn't have any option. And guess what? The new drill was a lot better, quicker, easier, less pain, less discomfort, less noise. But that's like us when we don't want to give up ourselves, our sense of self.
Yeah.
Because if there's fear blocking us from trying something new, all these teachings try to tell us we can instantly know it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
The fear is not rooted in what's true. Fear always comes from what's false. And then people say, aren't you supposed to have fear? How would I, know not to step out in front of traffic if there wasn't? Because common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't fear that teaches me how to live.
Right.
It's awareness that helps me understand. What's safe and what isn't. And I talk about this with all kinds of things. I say, you're never upset about what's going on in the moment. And people say, what do you mean by that? What? I give the example of, okay, if I'm standing on a corner in an intersection and I'm waiting to cross the street and traffic's going by and everything's fine and I've got all kinds of people there waiting with me. And all of a sudden, somebody runs the light and T-bones another car. And where there was a peaceful flow of traffic, now there's broken glass, bent metal, and bloody bodies for those people that like alliteration. In that moment, if I am horrified, that horror is from the past. If in that moment I have rage about the person I saw run the light and I want to go punch him in the face, that rage is from the past. And people say, what do you mean? That's ridiculous. And I say, no, listen, if I'm a competent adult standing there in that corner, if I'm awake and aware in the moment, and all of a sudden there's broken glass, bent metal, and bloody bodies, I move into action. Mm-hmm. If I'm a logistics expert, I start shouting out to people, help me with this, get over here, you call 911, you help me lift this. If I have first aid training or I'm a paramedic trained person, I start putting pressure on bleeding parts, etc., and triaging who needs the most help. There's no fear involved. It's
right.
Action that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is this making sense?
Yep, it's making sense.
And so then later on, maybe an hour or two later, now the police and the ambulance have been there and all the interviews have been taken and all this other stuff's happening. And now I'm sitting on the curb with my back against the building there with my knees pulled up to my chest, and I'm just shaking and shivering. And a paramedic comes over and says, oh, you're going into shock. What am I going into shock over? What's happening in that moment? No, I'm going into shock over all the negative thoughts I've got about what just happened. I'm not upset about what's going on in that moment on the curb.
Right.
I'm generating upset by pouring mind energy into negative thoughts about what happened an hour earlier. So we don't preach this is the truth. We say, watch this for yourself. Watch when you go through these situations. How many times I've talked about how I was in all of these different situations where I was called to be the bouncer and the protector in psychiatric hospitals and jailing and juvenile hall facilities, and how many times people were perpetrating violence and I was called in to, you know, bring the peace or disrupt it or end it. And people afterwards would say, well, how did you do that? I don't know. Because I acted without the thought, and because I acted without the thought, there wasn't emotion. There was just activity.
Mm-hmm.
There was being in the flow.
Right.
So we encourage people to question this for themselves. Is it true that you're never upset about what's going on in the moment? Is it true that every fearful thought you have is based in a lie and falseness? Just experiment with it for yourself. So, there you have it.
Good.
The fear that you're generating in the idea that I don't want to give up who I am, or if I let go and let the world, let life, let God, whatever, take over, that there'll be nothing left of me. And it's the opposite is more like the truth.
Yeah. How free we would be if we didn't care.
Well, that's the invitation.
Yeah.
And then you can discover for yourself how freeing it would be. And the teaching is that that's what they're calling knowledge, the direct experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't know it until you let yourself have the experience, or until you usher yourself into that kind of an experience.
I think of the word grace. Haven't we all experienced the time when we look back and you say, boy, I was so present that I was totally fine and everything was fine. And how did I do that? Well, in a way you're saying you didn't do it. It just took place because you had gotten out of the way.
Exactly, exactly. This is about what I was just reading. It says accepting, not creating the atonement, not achieving the atonement, not reaching it finally, just accepting it. It's already here.
Yeah.
Your mind has already been healed. The atonement has happened. You're
that
part of the flow of life. You can just accept
idea.
That that's the case rather than continue to pour your mind energy into the thoughts that you're separate and that you're not where you need to be and you need to change or et cetera. None of that's true.
Right.
In the pure essence, it's accepting what's already there.
That's a wonderful thought.
So thank you again for the comments and questions. I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. I appreciate you.
Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is, what is today? Today, my computer just keeps flipping. Today is Tuesday, September 24th. 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1. And that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And Michael was walking out to the balcony so that we're in two different rooms to continue the show. So we'll give him just a minute to dial in. And I see that Michael, oh, Michael's with us now. And Michael, you already have a caller. Michael Tatey is on. Michael Rice, can't hear you.
Yeah, my screen with my mute button disappeared, and sometimes it's hard to find. But I'm back, and welcome, everybody, and good morning, Michael. How are things
good
in Tijuana?
Good morning. That's wonderful. Wonderful, thanks. Can you hear me all right?
Loud and clear.
Good.
What's on your mind for today?
Hearing you all well, and
we're rocking.
We're having a joyous time in Missouri.
We are. It's cooled down. When we got here to Missouri, it was in the 90s, and it's now down in the high 70s, low 80s, so much nicer.
Nice. It has cooled here just within the last 24 hours, so that's great. Going to be 80s outlook for the next week. We'll definitely take that. Much, much nicer.
Awesome.
So, been in, enjoying the Book of Thomas. That's something I had not looked into before. It's quite a different take. Nice.
Yes.
Refreshing.
I'm in agreement with you on that.
Yeah, I like what you had mentioned, that that's likely what it presents is likely why it's not in the popularized versions today.
Well, it's really stated in the scriptures pretty clearly, you know, there was a secret teaching. And he didn't give it to everybody. And, of course, he couldn't give it to everybody because, you know, he said he wanted to. He said, there's so many things I want to say, but you can't hear them. You don't have the eyes to see, the ears to hear. You don't have the brain cells yet. So he speaks to the disciples. He says, I'm giving you straighter goods, but everybody else getting it in parables.
That's amazing, and it's yesterday's show and what you had just mentioned brings up some thoughts I've had for a while. So may I jump right in?
Go for it. I'm ready to rock.
Okay. A situation, I want to take this little situation in my life and then, if we have time, expound it onto the world scene. But it had a situation with a delivery company bringing, you know, packages to my home that I order. And I'm living, you know, a fairly remote area. It's not, you know, highly populated. And
right.
Many times over the past couple of years, and I didn't log out every time, but it's over 50% of packages are damaged, and a lot of times the goods are damaged. I have to call the company, or it's just a little bit of a hassle. So putting that in perspective with what you've been speaking about and have, you know, talked about, perception. Now, I am seeing this situation continue and realizing what I've learned from, the shows, that I've created this. I have somehow, this my thinking, drawn this to me. Would that be correct?
Well, there's a reason why, if something less than love comes up in my mind, it comes up, and that's because it's there. And I will tend to resonate circumstances to me that will bring it up. But are you responsible for the fact that the delivery service in a particular area of Texas is poor? No, I don't think so. I wouldn't go that far.
I appreciate that. And why I thought about this, I was telling a dear friend of mine about the situation here in Texas, and it was presented to me, well, have you considered just picturing in your mind the next time you have a package, it being in perfect condition and everything's fine? And I thought about that. I said, whoa, I have not. So that brings another question. I mean, that is a good thought. I appreciated that, you know, being presented to me. And
yes,
could that be why this situation is continuing to happen? I haven't done that. And I think, and I certainly would like to hear what you say, I think that would be a good, that'd be a good thing to put in my mind. It's positive energy. That's a good way to go, right?
I'd certainly support you in that. And
okay. And
can that have an impact on the delivery service? Absolutely. You know, you've heard me talk before about years ago when I used to keynote at Global Science Conference, mm-hmm. and there was a fellow named Marcel Vogel who brought a thing, who's a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. I mean, a real science techie kind of guy. And he brings this camera called a Delaware camera that has a tuning mechanism. It's not like a regular camera where you just flip the shutter and, you know, whatever's in front of it in the way of light energy is registered on the plate. But there's a tuning mechanism, and you can tune, like you'd tune a radio tuner, to different frequencies. And if that frequency were in front of the camera when you flip the shutter, then that energetic pattern would show up on the photographic plate. So, for mm-hmm. instance, he showed pictures of taking an acorn, a picture of an acorn with the Delaware camera, and what shows up on the photographic plate is an oak tree, if it's tuned to the right frequency. It's like, well, how is that possible? Well, obviously, in the acorn is an oak tree. I mean, it's pretty simple. Nobody's ever planted an acorn and gotten a Volkswagen or an apple tree or a rose or a snake. Every time you plant an acorn, you get an oak tree. So obviously somewhere in there is a pattern for the oak tree. It takes the light, the water, the soil, and it builds according to some sort of an image or stored energy field within the acorn. And, you know, if you can attune to it, obviously you could take a picture of it. Perfectly sensible. The upshot of his presentation was, here are the pictures of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. And a lot of people, when it comes to energy and resonance, are pushed and pulled by the energetic patterns around them. Someone who has a negative bent, sending out a negative energy, it's going to tend to, if the person in front of them, whatever the behavior is, whatever the circumstance is, if the person in front of them tends to have a negative bent, then there's going to be resonance. There's going to be a tendency for that to come forward. And unless that person is very conscious of what's going on inside themselves and in charge of their own minds, then they're going to tend to follow the pattern that's there. So to me, it would make perfect sense that if I'm really in pain or upset or disturbed about these packages are always damaged, I'm going to tend to energetically support getting packages that are always damaged. If I can shift that energy, now, you know, I can shift my energy to the absolute perfect image of the packages being delivered perfectly, and it may not make the slightest bit of difference because the people involved are not, there isn't a resonance for that energy, and they're not going to be influenced by it. On the other hand, if I happen to have a driver that, you know, he normally doesn't pay much attention, but he gets this other energetic input, and we have, there is nothing in the physical world that we know of that can stop the high energy waves that leave the mind we think a thought. So if the driver on my route happens to have a streak of integrity in him, and energetically I can touch that, then his behaviors may change according to the inclination resonated in him from what I've sent him. You'd have to be pretty profoundly powerful to have some sort of absolute control. Don't know anybody that powerful. Yeshua had a pretty good record of it, but.
That's true. I appreciate that, and these are along the lines that I was thinking. It's good to hear that, and I'm about to the point, going to make a statement and love to hear what you think. As I'm deeply thinking about, you know, many of these things, this delivery situation, you know, other things happen in life that you face, and the more I consider this, the more I am alert and aware of these situations happening, I would almost say that everything less than ideal that might be going around in my world and might be coming around in my world is there to awaken me and alert me to change thinking.
I'd go with that. You've heard me say it many times, the purpose of life, if we hold a disease energy. To me, you know, life abhors death. Life is here to support life. So if someone is carrying a disintegrative or a death energy, then life is going to, through not any magical or mystical means, just through resonance. If there's a low-level energy in someone, and there's somebody in the neighborhood with a similar low-level energy, they're probably going to cross paths. And when they do, the condition in one mind is going to tend to resonate the similar condition in the other mind. And unless the other mind is very conscious, it's going to tend to play that out. Now, again, we're talking about tendencies. We're not talking about absolutes. But we can have a pretty profound impact. And, of course, the closer we are to someone in relationship, you know, let's say we're in relationship with someone we've exchanged genes with.
Mm-hmm.
That is, we've had sexual intercourse. There's a whole different level of resonance and connected energy between those two people than, you know, some guy walking by the house, and a whole different level of impact of expectation and goals. So recognizing we live in a resonance universe and we're creators, then when I'm willing to take 100% responsibility, now I may not have the even the smallest amount of responsibility in this situation, but when I'm willing to entertain that perhaps I have 100% responsibility, then if there's a part of my mind that I've hidden from myself, in owning responsibility, I'm going to be able to find and change that part of my mind. If I'm always in denial, look what they do to me, look what they do to me, they do it, they do it, they do it, then living in denial, the part of my mind that I could repair that might influence and bring a change is just not accessible to me. And, of course, that's one of the purposes of the forgiveness worksheet process, the reality management, is to collapse into the hidden parts of the mind and clean them out. And you can, you know, you do that through choice and volition rather than waiting for somebody to come and kick you in the limitation. But you can rest assured that every energy that you hold, whether it's yours personally or something that came down the genetic line, every disintegrative energy that you hold, somebody somewhere is going to kick you right there. It's going to play that out for you. And we'll do one of two things. We'll live out of a pretty much a universal religion that a lot of people are very committed to. Even the atheists are committed to this one, and that is the one world universal religion of blame. And so when that happens, a person goes into this big blame conversation, and now in denial, they dissociate from the part of their mind that drew it and that is in need of healing. The person who goes in the other direction says, I'm 100% responsible for this. Let me look and see if I can find even the slightest energy in me that's influencing this. And now my evidential mind, seeing as I've given it permission, can then show me what it is I need to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And circumstances change. And I'll just say that, you know, from years of, you know, over 50 years now of working with people, I've just seen so many people whose lives were filled with tragedy and trauma and turmoil and loss and deprivation and health challenges, that when they said, okay, I'm going to take 100% responsibility, I'm going to start to change my mind, moved out of that state into a state where, hey, you know, life is serving me pretty well. And I've seen that happen consistently enough that I'm in the space where I believe it's 100% accurate that we are creators and we have an influence on everything that happens. Not necessarily control, but an influence.
Mm-hmm. No, it's so relieving in many ways. It might be difficult to begin to work through it as it was for me back a few years ago, but it's relieving on the other end, and it's coming easier and easier to speak about it, to live through it, to think through it, and I work through it.
Exactly.
I remember back, well, some conversations we had real early on, and I used to take part in activism and things along that nature to a middle degree. It wasn't, you know, nationwide or anything, but I really got to grasp early on that is more than likely perpetuating the problem. And not to fuel the fire, in other words, and think through it differently. So I bring that back full circle to the delivery company, which I have called, and, you know, maybe 20 years ago I would have had a much different attitude with them. It's just a loving attitude, and, you know, can we do something about this, folks? You know, this not pleasant to receive broken items. And I'm still, the understanding is that if we're presenting things in the most loving manner that we know how, then we are not throwing fuel on the fire. We're working towards coming to some kind of understanding with the company, with each other, for a better world. Would that be reasonable?
I would go with that, and there are some mm-hmm. situations when you recognize vibration and energy, there are some situations where you might be dealing with someone who is not going to offer any form of attention or shift or change if you just maintain that totally serene voice and space. You know, I've seen situations where my inclination was to crank up the volume to get somebody's attention because there was no interest in paying attention to anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I always have to look at what my motivation is and be in touch with what's going on inside of me.
Yeah.
And you never know what the root of the inclinations are that move us in the direction of something that's less than love. But can I maintain this connectedness to this space of love? And that's oftentimes that's the challenge of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, the results are so much more beautiful, so much more comforting, and it's great.
And healthier.
And
because
healthier,
everything that
yes.
goes on in our minds goes on in our bodies.
And we're creating that. As you mentioned earlier, we're creating all of the chemicals within that either break us down or build us up.
Exactly. You know, in that opening phrase in the book of John, where it doesn't say in the beginning was the Word and the Word became flesh, but rather in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh, that literally our thoughts become our physiology, and there's no separation between what we call the body and the mind. They're one and the same.
It didn't take me long to latch onto that, coming from a bit on the health arena and realizing the difference between the placebo effect and the nocebo effect. I mean, it's
right.
quite clear. It's quite clear. And it's just amazing to think through it and reason with it. But at the end, we're creating it. So bringing that full forward to our present-day world situation. So I see my little world with the packages and what's happening, and now I'd like to explore with you this world, and we see that we have the political scene, the dominance, the tyranny, and how that is created collectively. How are we doing that collectively? Just looking for some clear thoughts on that. And, you know, going back, you know, maybe to our parents' generation, and maybe grandparents, the Hitler situation, whether or not we believe that in entirety or what's written, or the Stalin situation, still it was a very difficult time and people did lose their lives. And how does all that fit, Michael, with the world of perception versus what happened and what didn't happen?
Well, my take would be, again, if you look at the fact that we are by nature creators and that creation gives no concern to what it is we're creating. You know, at the moment, you could imagine the creator, you know, you look at this awesome whole thing called life and the earth, just limiting it just to the earth here. And it's pretty awesome and pretty amazing. And I can easily imagine the moment at which the creator said to itself, well, you know, I've been running the show, you know, from the skunk to the fox to the fish. I got this whole thing going on, and I want something new, so I'm working toward building an instrument for something new and different. And Adamos comes on the scene. And I could imagine the moment where the creator says, okay, you know, I have done this whole thing and been in total control of it. And now I'm going to do something different. I'm going to turn control over to you. I'll give you an instruction, a three-word instruction. Ask and you will receive. Now, I'm not going to correct you. I'm not going to fault you. I'm not going to discriminate against what you ask for. If you ask for terror and trauma and tragedy, then I will bring you terror and trauma and tragedy. You look at that line in the scriptures, it says, shall there be evil in the city and the Lord has not done it? There's only one functioning power in the universe. You know, if you get down to it, I mean, do you know how to raise your finger?
Do I know how to raise my finger?
Yeah.
Just lift it up, right?
Well, that's raising it. I didn't ask if you could raise your finger. I asked if you knew how to raise your finger.
Oh. No.
You don't have a clue. I mean, do you know what area of the brain, what brain tells us to fire, to follow what muscles, what nerves, what signals, what's the voltage of the signals, what are the balances and the counterbalance for you to just do a little raise your finger? You and I don't have a clue, but there's something in us that does. And that's something I can easily imagine it saying, okay, so I'm going to turn choice over to you. You tell me what you want, and I'll bring it about. There is a pattern for what's best for you, and if you choose to be with that pattern, then your life is going to go really well. But if you choose to go against that pattern, then you're going to have some challenges and some difficulty. But I'm just going to bring about what you say you want. And then you look at how non-human minds in their hostility and fear reach out to brainwash others into hostility and fear. And, you know, you can easily – a good example, you probably remember, you know, you've done quite a bit of driving over the years. There was a time when you were driving somewhere. It was probably late in the night or maybe early morning. And you had your nice, quiet AM station on, the one that you have has that favorite, you know, kind of classical music, and you're driving along listening to your nice, quiet classical music. And all of a sudden, when you made this journey, there was one place, one corner that you would turn, or one highway that you would shift off of onto another one, and all of a sudden, your nice, quiet FM music disappeared, and you had this rock and roll noise come in. What happened? Well, there's a thing happens with an AM radio where there's a control on the signal, and there has to be a certain percentage of signal strength in order for that signal to take over the circuitry in that radio, occupy it exclusively, and become the only station you're listening to. So if you imagine that as you're driving down the road, you're driving away from that station that has your nice, quiet music on it, and you get far enough away that the signal strength of that station drops, and you drive into the field of another station, and all of a sudden you're listening to this rock and roll raunchy noise. What happened? All that happened was the signal strength changed, and whatever had the strongest signal took over. You get enough minds in rage and guilt and fear and blame and sadness and hatred and vengeance and greed and grief. And when that signal strength becomes strong enough, it's going to take over every mind that has a potential of that, has that in their genes, has that energy within them. And it's going to tend to run their instrument, if we think of the body-mind unit as an instrument. If you listen to the physicist Yeshua, he referred to this very principle. And what he was trying to do, or what he was working toward, is getting enough people to understand the tools he was teaching that they became the signal, or they participated in the signal that was designed for human beings, that was designed to radiate from our human created essence, which is love. And he said, you know, and the world was pretty crazy, not much different than now, politically or any other way. You know, you look at that story where, you know, Peter asked Yeshua, you know, how many swords should I bring? And Yeshua says, oh, just bring one. And I can imagine that Peter, as many at that time, were thinking, oh, we're going to have a Messiah. It's going to come and wipe out the Roman army, and we're going to be, you know, on top again, and he's going to be the king. And he had no idea that the reason he allowed Peter to bring one sword, I mean, I can imagine Peter was pretty excited in that mindset, going, wow, I can't wait to see Yeshua wield this sword and wipe out the Roman army. Instead, Yeshua told him, after he struck out at the high priest's servant, told him, Peter, if you live by that sword, you will die by that sword. If that's the energy that you allow to resonate in you and you will lash out with it, then that's the very thing that's going to kill you. And, you know, as I see it, what the work of forgiveness, as Yeshua put it out, was about was giving the people the tools with which they could delete the energetic patterns based in all forms of hostility or fear and retain only energetic patterns based in love. Those who did that, when they reached critical mass, would together radiate an influencing energy, a signal, so to speak, like the radio station, that would impact every other mind on the planet. So he said, as a physicist, not a theologian, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. It's only going to take a few people who live from that higher vibratory plane to bring that energy into their broadcast station, which would be their minds, and join with other minds broadcasting the same signal to produce a signal strong enough that it will obliterate the lower energy, just like your FM station or your nice quiet music on your AM station was obliterated when you shifted the energy signal from one station to the other. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. And I've given some thoughts as to what I see happening. Appreciate that, your thoughts. And we can see through history, at least what we can read of it, the times of where we see, you know, pockets of disruption in different areas, and then what we see is in the whole known world at the time, the disruption increasing and then waning. And we can just look at the last 100 years. You know, we saw they were called world wars, but they were still somewhat localized, in my thought, to what we see today. Today we're seeing the disruption on a way wider scale, as I sense it. So where I would like to explore is, I talk to many people and I see people that are looking at the world scene and saying, oh, we have to, you know, prepare because we're told, you know, times are not going to be so great in the near future. And then I speak with folks that are just like, okay, they're oblivious. They don't want to focus any energy toward that. And I don't know if it's they don't want to consider it, or if they're consciously saying, I don't want to give any energy to it at all. I think the people that I sense, it's just that they don't want to deal with that and like life the way it is, and why consider anything different? So a question would be, is it, again, I think this is almost the same as the package delivery. Are we seeing a situation that's less than ideal? How are we going to react to it? And then what to do to prepare for a time that's less than ideal? Does that make any... That question that I presented... Right.
Michael, if you're talking...
Excuse me, I was muted there. I'd hit my mute button.
That's
there.
Right.
So my take would be that you've got to be careful where you source your information, because there are pockets and pods of information that can take us in 1,000 different directions. And many of those directions are there as options only because many minds are engaged in them. They're not actual and they're not true. For instance, on the topic of world war versus what's going on the planet right now, there's at least one group up in Canada that I touched into some of the research recently, and they study peace and war on planet Earth. And they're saying that, according to their studies, this is the most peaceful time that has been seen on planet Earth in thousands of years. And I forget exactly what the number was, but they had gone back and calculated from the beginning of scriptural time to today. And if I remember correctly, I believe that they... trying to remember what the number was, whether it was billion or trillion, that something in the range of 6 trillion people had been murdered in war on planet Earth over the last 6,000 years. And again, my number may be way off. It's been a while since I've read those numbers, so I don't remember exactly. But their conclusion was, this is the most peaceful time the Earth has ever seen, historically. And then if you look at some other statistics, like, for instance, you know, if we go back to the turn of the century, or even, you know, let's say go to the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, more people are living with their food needs and their need for water satisfied than ever in history on a percentage basis. Of course, there are more people, but on a percentage basis, there are more people being fed, more people being well-fed, more people who have access to water, and instead of starving horribly ever in human history. And to me, what that speaks of is there's a stronger field for people who are truly in empathy. Is there the terrorist? Is there the trauma? Is there the hate? Is there the vengeance? Yes. But overall, I think more people are devoting their resources to taking care of each other and taking care of the planet than any time in history, at least according to the numbers that I've seen. And oftentimes, you know, those who put fear into people's minds, oh, you have to get ready. And I'm, you know, one who says, you know, always be ready for what could happen in your neighborhood tomorrow or, you know, from just, you know, the local creek or whatever. You know, yes, sure. Obviously be aware and be prepared, but to buy into a fear-based prepper mind, I think, makes a contribution on an energetic level to bringing that to fruition. And of course, I document it from the work that I've done, that my take and what I've dedicated my life to is handing people who live in trauma and drama and pain and hate and fear and rage and guilt and handing them tools to heal themselves individually and collectively. If I think back to the early days when I first started traveling 40, 45 years ago, most people looked at me when I was talking about this stuff 50 years ago like, Mick, you are some kind of wacko. And, you know, it was difficult to find places to present this kind of thought to any sizable audience. And what I've noticed, you know, as time unfolded, I look back 20 years ago and where even a little small burg that I would go through and had somebody who connected with my work and invited me. And, you know, there was a little holistic healing center with a massage therapist and a doctor who did some modicum of natural healing in every little town, in every little... 30 years earlier, that just wasn't true. So the evidence that I see is that we are on an uplift. Is there some crazy stuff going on? Yeah, I think there is a horrific threat right now in the world to women and children. And I think we need to be speaking up about that and doing something about it. And doing something about it from a space where if I have hostility or fear about it, I need to clean up my mind so that I am not a house divided against myself. Because if I, you know, I mean, you listen to, it was actually back in, who was it? I believe it was Ronald Reagan's war-making chief, Department of Defense. And he wrote a book, which to me is a real symbol of the kind of turning point we needed to get to, and I think we hit that turning point just after the turn of the century. But this guy, and I think, what was his name? Weinberger, Winecast, Wine something. I don't remember his exact name. But he wrote a book entitled Fight for Peace. I mean, you want to talk about an insane mind. You want to talk about a house divided against yourself. Can you get much more divided against yourself than saying we're going to go fight for peace? You know, it's crazy on its face.
We can resonate. Thankfully, we can process through that. Was it Caspar Weinberger?
Yes, Caspar Weinberger. Yep.
It just came.
Fight for Peace.
I didn't remember the book. But it kind of rang a bell when you mentioned that. Well, yeah. I appreciate those thoughts, Michael, and I do I do agree, of course, there's a lot of very crazy things happening, and yet there are many groups, as I'm well aware of and speak with, groups for regenerative farming, for regenerative agriculture, for...
Exactly.
You know, placing,
more than ever.
Placing the emphasis on protecting the earth as our home. And yes, that is. So yes, I agree. We have to be so cautious about the source of the information, and not act from a fear mind, as I believe you're saying, but to take part in these good programs.
Yeah, be aware of what you join with.
Well, worthwhile adventure, right?
Yeah. Yeah, energetic joining is powerful. And what we join with, we strengthen, we empower. And, of course, the Miracles talks about, you know, what we see. We literally become part of creating it. And if I see something in the world that I think needs to change, and I'm in disturbance and upset about it, I better do my work first, or, again, I'm a house divided against myself. Then, once I have done my work around it, or while I'm doing my work around it, because it's not an overnight event, and, you know, oftentimes there are many, many layers of the mind that need to be healed and cleaned up, that to the best of one's ability to work from the state of active love, taking responsibility for, you know, when they said to Yeshua, what's most important in the law? And they're talking about human beings. And in essence, what I hear that question being is like, if you want to be a human being, what do you have to do first? What's most important? And again, in the Aramaic, the word law simply means the way it works. It's not the rule of a superior. It's not somebody standing up there with a big hatchet that says, I'm going to get you if you break my law. You can't break a law. It's not possible. I mean, it's a silly idea that you can break a law. You can break man's rules and regulations. See, the speed limit's 55. You can do 60. But that's not a law. That's a rule. A law is the way things work, and you can't break the way things work. Things work the way they work, whatever you do. And what happens is when people don't understand the way things work, like that first instruction Yeshua gave was have rachma when you think of the creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain self, for upon this hangs the law and all its prophets. In other words, everything you want is based on this. And what does it mean? That I'm responsible, that I take responsibility for maintaining a condition of love in my mind, so that my human beingness, my human presence, is what fuels my human physiology. And when I have difficulty doing that, that's the time to pull out a worksheet and do my work and clean up layer by layer by layer by layer. And I'll just say that, you know, acknowledging in terms of my own process that, you know, spending more than 50 years developing this work, teaching this work more than full time for that long, that for me personally, some of the deepest work that I've done in my own personal process, my own inner challenges, has been in the last 2 or 3 years.
That's powerful. Wow. So this is amazing. And I listened to what, you know, you're saying. 50 years ago, people weren't open to these ideas, and you know, neither was I. I was around. I was probably wrapped up in things that need to be, or, you know, maybe could have been doing better. And now there are people that are listening and that are waking. So instead of putting energies fighting what we think as not so good, creating these, you know, what some term is alternate. I think one of the terms people use alternate societies. I don't know if that's really a great term, but an alternate way of life maybe would be good. And you know, the permacultures, the regenerative farming's getting back to our natural roots.
Our caretaking posture on the earth, yes.
Mm-hmm. What's good for, well, the earth can be good for everyone. And when we were growing up, there people used to make fun of the tree huggers. And now that's not only a good thing, it's so good on so many levels. We get grounding from it. That's our life. That's a great kind of a life-sustaining situation that tree is there.
Exactly.
So we can breathe.
Yep.
It's just amazing how much it's some things are changing. And that really comes down to what you have mentioned many times. How did you refer to that as the numbers, the big shift that you had a term for it in the past?
Critical mass.
Critical mass. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and we can't get, like, what the tree has to offer us as a creature, as a life form, we can't get from our perception or from our intellect. We've got to shut that thing off. We've got to step outside of that to step into the energy range. You know, if you talk in terms of physics, what we know of the energy frequencies on the planet, like, you know, science says 95% of the energy in the universe is dark matter. We don't know anything about it. It's that dark. We don't know anything. But we've got a whole society and a whole way of thinking and living that's built in this carbon-based memory system, the mind of man, as the scriptures described it. And this construct, this 9-bit mind that shows us everything that's consistent with what we've put into this thing as purpose, as goals. And that's why the forgiveness process involves canceling goals, because it allows us to break loose of the errant parts of that system that has been in development for thousands of years, collapsing that and stepping into an energetic world that can feed us directly with its energetic influence. And we can come to direct knowledge of it rather than going through the mind. So, you know, when I appear to be in workshops and such, tongue-in-cheek saying you got to be out of your mind, I'm actually being quite literal. Yes, if there's something your mind's got in the way of information that you need, go to it and get the information. But don't live there. It's not a good place to live. You know, it's such a fragmented, tiny, tiny, tiny segment. And if it's based in power person dynamics of hostility or fear, the only thing it's ever going to give you is evidence for hostility and fear. But stepping outside of it, you get to have a direct experience. And that direct experience will feed you. And there is an energy that Yeshua described called Ruka Dikutcha that will teach you, will give you every bit of information that you need. Your mind can't do that.
Yeah.
And we've been taught to rely on the mind. And, you know, the mind is the end-all and the be-all. And the truth is, the secrets are hidden by the mind, not in the mind. It's when we free ourselves from the mind that things change, that we become available to being fed by what the actuality is rather than stuck in this little tiny framework called self and the mind. So taking time to just be still and be quiet rather than, oh, I got to perform, got to get things done, do. Mm-hmm. No, take time to be. So important.
Which has been, you know, drilled into likely most of us since little children. Do, perform.
Yeah, well, it makes us good commercial servants.
Yeah, boy.
You know, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of research that shows that children before they go to school. And, you know, there are wonderful, amazingly dedicated school teachers, but they are part of a system. And, you know, kids go to school and their imaginations are through the roof until they get through, and I don't remember exactly the numbers, through, you know, the first half of grade one, grade two, and all of a sudden that spiritual faculty plummets. Mm-hmm. And the system is structured to make of us good commercial servants.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Drive all the creativity right out of us. And
there's no life. There's no life in that.
In that.
So forgiving that brainwash, removing that energetic dynamic, which is what the forgiveness process is about, is what allows us to return to that state that Yeshua spoke of what was the first law. There's this condition called Rachma. It's a gateway. When it's open, then you get to experience life as a human being. The world specializes in closing that gateway through hostility, fear, and blame. So everything that moves in the mind that's based in hostility or fear or blame, whether it's toward self or other or the big threat out there or whoever, whatever the boogeyman is that somebody believes in, that hostility, threat, or fear is an energy that's inside of us if we're experiencing it, and that's what needs to be faced and forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
So in that circumstance, we can actually be out of our minds. And then we're available for that eternal force in us that will teach us exactly what everything's about.
So it is comforting to know that we can help others to take part in some of these new programs and refocus our energies back to nature. And it brings me to, there's a wonderful quote that's coming to my mind, so if I can't recall it directly, I want to say Churchill, but it wasn't. It was along the lines of, if we see something, we see the world that we don't want, don't focus on that, create a new one. Does that
yes.
somewhat ring a bell?
Yeah.
I
know the quote you're thinking of, yeah. Right, rather than trying to build a world to go. That was actually Buckminster Fuller, if I remember correctly.
Yes, sir. That's it.
Bucky Fuller. Don't bother trying to beat that one down. Create a more attractive alternative.
Well, that's beautiful. It's wonderful to think about that and to be a part of it, be a small part. And that...
Have you ever seen the movie Gandhi? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead before we go on to that other... So your homework assignment...
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Your homework assignment, watch the movie Gandhi. Powerful, powerful. And, you know, one of the things, and you see that all over the place, that he said was, be the change you want to see in the world.
Be the change, yep.
But,
beautiful.
But there's a scene in it, a powerful scene in it, where, you know, he's nearing the time when he's going to be murdered for his work. And he's in his ashram. And somebody, one of the reporters, is talking to him about his great magnanimous presence in the world and what a difference he's making to governments and such and such and such. And Gandhi's kind of like, yeah, and, you know, I was just getting ready to go feed the goats. And in the world I live in right now, feeding the goats sometimes is more important than that kind of stuff. Ideas to that, you know, it's like being alive where I am in the present moment is more important than accomplishing all the things that the world says need to be accomplished. The greatest contribution we can be is to be in the world as that space, fulfilling our purpose.
Wow.
But it's a powerful picture. The whole film is a powerful stand for living as a human being.
I remember reading about that, the reviews on it. That goes back quite a while, doesn't it? Just roughly?
Oh, yeah. It's probably 30 years ago or so.
That's what I was thinking. It's been a while. I have to go back and see that.
Yeah, it's a movie that we used to show just about every year at Heartland, and we haven't done Heartland since 2019. It's probably time to go back and look at it again, because it's the energy of it. It carries, the way they put it together, it carries one into a space that's very powerful.
Mm. It's so comforting, so exciting to realize these things and to be a part. This is how we're going to be a part of the critical mass, I believe.
Yeah.
This continuous change.
Yeah. So joining you in that process, my friend.
It's wonderful.
And I'm not sure that the type of, you know, in his ashram, the type of farming that they did would be exactly permaculture, but it was very, what he did way back then was very oriented toward really taking care of the earth.
Mm-hmm. I remember being in the very remote areas of India and the farming they did. It was beautiful seals, the fields, the tea fields. Wow. They have a very nice system, but they also have the commercialized large portions also. So that's changing in that country, from my understanding.
Yeah.
They're realizing the mistakes made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the imperialists came in. There is this imperial mindset. A mindset of hostility, fear, possession, ownership, control, as opposed to a mindset of the presence of love. And that whole imperial mindset, you look at the number of lives that were destructively touched by the British Empire in their colonialism and some of the crazy stuff that was done. And they called it success. And unfortunately, that mindset is still alive and well. Just look where you're looking for someone playing the game of control, and there's hostility or fear, and bingo, there it is. Been going on for a long time, a mind without the condition of Rachma. First order of business.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Well, we certainly appreciate this time with you all, and I know you're on vacation, and still we just so appreciate all of us that you're there for us, Michael and Jeannie and Tim, and it's really neat. Y'all are in Branson right now, correct? Or in that area?
We're in Branson, Missouri right now, yes.
Branson. My friend just told me their son is heading up there. He just came back from there. 2-3 weeks ago, heading back up this week. So I think by the time he gets there, you're heading the end of the week over to Heartland.
Heading
right?
On, eh? Yeah, we'll be heading out then. So
tell the folks hello down there.
All right, we'll do it, sir.
Heartland, and thank you once again. It's been wonderful to speak with you today.
All right. Lots of love and blessings. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Awesome.
Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.